Hello and welcome to another Dr. Jane's 10-Minute Positive Mental Health Podcast. Today I wanted to talk to you about a lady that came to see me, Emily, and she came to see me because of the trouble that she was having with her teenage son who we'll call Byron. Now, the reason that she came to see me was because he was in his mid-teens, he was a school refuser. He would just sit and play video games all day. She could never get him to do anything. Her and her husband, Carlton, could never get him to do anything. And he was disrespectful. He would swear at people. He was quite violent at times. She'd kind of had agencies involved. You know, obviously he was a school refuser, so the school had to kind of get involved in the first place. But from what she said, they were quite happy and quite quick to wash their hands of him. And there was talk about, you know, technically he was meant to be being homeschooled, and that ticked all of their boxes and they were quite happy with that. But of course, you know, he would just do what he wanted, you know, sleep till mid-afternoon, he'd be gaming all the time, wouldn't go out much. And she said that was one of the things about him, that he'd never had that many as he was growing up. He'd always found it a little bit difficult to have friends. He'd had one or two, and she said they were quite nice, and they would, you know, but eventually that friendship would poodle out. She said they grew out of him. He always kind of stayed at a certain stage socially. So she came because she was just kind of at her wit's end with him. And very quickly I asked her husband, you know, Byron's dad, to come in, Carlton, to come in as well at the same time, because I needed to get kind of both ideas of, you know, how they were parenting, because that's essentially what they wanted help with. And it soon turned out that there was no, you know, they weren't blaming each other for anything. They were a very kind of solid couple. I think with all the issues that they'd had with Byron over the years, that kind of consolidated their relationship. Sometimes it goes the other way. It breaks a relationship, having a child that is quite testing. But no, it kind of consolidated the relationship. And I needed to find out a little bit about them, and not only how they were parenting, because obviously how they were parenting, because there didn't seem to be any boundaries. There didn't seem to be any consequences. And when we went through a history, as I say, he'd kind of been a tricky child. She'd had her first daughter only, I think it was about 14 months after, you know, when Byron was 14 months old. So they were quite close in age. And, you know, she felt that that was a contributory thing. So, of course, you know, they felt sorry for Byron because there was this attention-seeking baby that had come along. And, you know, there was just less and less and less boundaries. And it was interesting because when I got a family history, I like to take as much family history as possible, I would say, what was he like with the wider family? And seemingly, when it came to aunts, uncles, grandparents, and especially the grandfather, the maternal grandfather, he was really well behaved, even when he was a youngster, because maternal grandfather had a way of, he wasn't harsh. You know, Emily says he was a little bit on the strict side when they grew up, but there were boundaries. He had boundaries, and kids like boundaries. They might not like boundaries at the time when you're telling them to get to bed or brush their teeth or stop playing or you know, whatever it is. But there is something, you know, there's something very essential about kids need boundaries, because they need to know that they have that secure framework that they're operating in. And if they're testing the boundaries, which kids do, and then that boundary moves further on, and then they keep testing it, and that boundary keeps moving further on, what happens is, you know, there's just chaos for them, so they don't know where they are. So what happened was, you know, so we looked at background. So Emily's dad was a little bit on the harsh side, not too much. And when she talked about it, I said, what was it like for you growing up? You know, because we often, you know, you need to think about how you've been parented so you can parent, and what role models you're taking. And it turned out dad was a bit, you know, he was harsh and he was boundaried. No, he was a little bit harsh and he was a bit boundaried. But she said it was okay. But she said she would describe herself as the good child. She'd had a couple of older sisters, and they'd kind of, as is the want with family dynamics, as I've spoken to you about before, they'd taken the roles. You know, you had the old one that was doing the classical, get all the good roles, the good girl, the one that'll achieve very well. Second one comes along, those first roles have all been taken up, so she then starts being the slightly wild one, and the one that's harder to tame. She starts being the wild one, and the one that's kind of, his behavior is a little bit all over the place. And then you had Emily, who came along as the third one, and she was kind of a bit roleless. So she was just kind of the very quiet one. She was the one that would sit in a corner and almost kind of, you know, make the agreement, the unsaid agreement, that if she didn't cause any problems, problems like her next oldest sister had, could she please stay? That's kind of a very typical kind of third child, especially if all the sexes are the same. So, but there was a little bit of the, you know, rebellion in her as well. So when she could, she left home to go to, I don't know, some kind of college when she was quite young. And she enjoyed that. She enjoyed the freedom. She enjoyed, you know, making her own way in life. But she always said she was the slightly softer one in whatever group she was in, whether it was the group of college, socially, when she worked. If anybody wanted, you know, a nice comfy shoulder to cry on, she'd be the person to come to, and she'd be the one to kind of sort them out. So she was a nice person, you know, but she'd kind of, she didn't really know how to be boundaried, because her role model for being boundaried, she found a little bit on the harsh side. And when we spoke about Dad's background, Dad had come from the West Indies. Well, actually, he hadn't come straight away from the West Indies. He'd been left there while his parents had come over to Europe to work. And he'd been left there, and he'd been left in the care of, he called them his aunt and uncle, but he said they were actually no relation to him. And he said it was pretty awful, actually. He was in, they ran a small shop, and from a very early age, he was working all the time. And he said there was one time he tried to run away, and he was literally pulled back into the shop. And this was when he was only about 7, 8, 9, something like that. And he said they actually kind of bound him up and put him under the counter under the shop. You know, it's a real abuse that had gone on for this guy. So when he had the opportunity to come over to the UK and come and be with his mum and dad. His mum and dad had split up by then. He was an only child. His mum and dad had split up by then. But they were both still living in the UK. When he came over, again, there was that sense of, you know, they'd created, his mum and dad had created separately, obviously, because they'd split up, but they'd created their own lives. And he didn't know where he was or who he was. He'd spent such a horrible time back in the West Indies that when he came over here and he was given sort of like lots of freedoms and stuff, he kind of admitted he just didn't know what to do with it. And what he did was he became very studious. He could have gone any way whatsoever, but he said he became very studious. This, you know, the UK gave him opportunities to kind of get education, and he became a teacher. And one of the things was, he said that was the irony, that he could control a class full of unruly teenagers, and yet when it came to his own son, he couldn't. And that was always a bit of a thorn in his side. He said it would be an embarrassment. He couldn't talk about that because he'd think that then, you know, his colleagues would think badly of him. So we looked at both of their backgrounds and what has kind of led into the way that they were parenting their children, especially Byron. So mum was kind of not wanting to be too harsh because that was her background. And Dad was, he was kind of, I think one of the things that Dad admitted was that he was, you know, he was so thrilled when Byron was born and he was a boy, because he said it was going to be like, you know, he was going to be able to live his life, or what should have been his childhood life, vicariously via Byron, which is not always, you know, yeah, you do that a little bit. Most parents do that a little bit, and you want them to have the stuff that you didn't have. But it became too much, you know, whatever Byron wanted when he was a youngster, because Carlton had nothing, he just got. So again, there was this no boundaries thing. So what we did was we looked at their parenting, and we had to kind of make it really quite solid and clear, because obviously the moment that Byron said, I want X, Y and Z, they were going to say no. And of course, he was going to kick off, which is what they were really, you know, scared of. And he was leading the whole family, including his two sisters as well, by intimidation and by threat, because if he didn't get what he wanted, he would, you know, he threatened to kick off. And if he still didn't get what he wanted, then he would kick off. So what we talked about was that he was going to have to realise, because he was only a teenager and they were the parents, they were the adults, and that was going to have to be recalibrated, if you like, because he'd grown up thinking, yeah, well, of course, they're the parents, exactly, but he could still get what he wanted. There were going to be consequences for his actions, because at the moment, everything he did bad, even if it was threatening to kick off because he's being told, you know, he can't have the latest, you know, Xbox game or something, and everything that he then did was a justification for his behaviour. He knew what he had to do, what buttons he had to press. So what happened was that they wrote it out. They actually wrote it out, and they, you know, they wanted to come up with a formal contract you know, it works for some people. So he could actually see what was going to go on. Of course, you know, to begin with, he just laughed at them because they tried all sorts of things over the years. You know, they said when he was younger, you know, they tried a star chart again, trying to, you know, engage his behaviour. And he just laughed because he just thought it was kind of like a teenage version of a star chart. And when, you know, they had to stick with it, and they knew that they had to stick with it. And one of the things that they also needed to do, which they did, was they started engaging with the rest, you know, the other agencies, such as the schools, the local authority. They started engaging with the other and getting them to actually do their job as well. So instead of the school just kind of going, oh, yeah, you're being homeschooled, and the local authority saying, yeah, tick, 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 you're being homeschooled, as long as you're not on the streets and as long as you're not getting into trouble or costing us any money, they were quite happy to leave them. But they actually made them engage. And there was talk about having to get social services engaged, which, of course, Carlton was a bit mortified about, because how was that going to reflect on him? But it was something that he was prepared to swallow, because he knew that eventually the goal was to get Byron back to school. What happened was there was a special kind of liaison family welfare officer that they'd never even heard about until they actually got the engagement. You know, they started, getting the agencies to engage with them. And they set up a scheme, and it was a sort of like a very gently approach that, you know, they were trying to get him back to school. And they did it on small, kind of very small increments. And that, you know, and one of the other things was that, you know, there was the suggestion about getting him tested for to see whether he was on the spectrum or not, because, you know, autism is a, you know, social and communication disorder. And one of the things was that they'd said that he had difficulties with friendships. They got him tested. It was minor. It was nothing. But it just highlighted the stuff that he had socially. And then it turned out that, you know, he was kind of quite socially anxious. That's why he liked playing video games, because he didn't have to face people. So, you know, there was talk about doing some work with that to kind of get his confidence going and stuff. So when I left them, they'd re-engaged, or they'd got all the services to engage with them, reluctantly in some cases, but they pushed and they'd got that done. And there was a plan about him returning to school, and to begin with, very slowly. And that's kind of, you know, it's about how, you know, you've got to remember, you parents, how you have been parented, whether that's good, bad, or somewhere in the middle, is going to have an effect on how you parent. You might want to go completely opposite to how you were parented, because it wasn't very good. There's an old kind of 50s psychologist, child psychologist, called Winnicott, and I often quote him to people, because if you've had a good childhood, you relate to how it is to be a parent from your parents' point of view. If you have had not a very good childhood, when you have a child, you then relate it from the child's point of view. And that was very much what Carlton said he was doing. He was relating it from his point of view, and he was just giving Byron too much, you know. But you have to do it within boundaries, and that's what they really realised. So yes, he was going back to school. It was very limited, and, you know, with the hope of growth. And they were talking about him doing exams, and he was actually engaging. And when he kind of started doing some of the stuff, and they got a few kind of just small groups of people for him to be social with, and he was actually doing okay, and he had lots of things in common with a lot of them. So it turned out to be, you know, it was on its way to hopefully being an okay thing for them. I've been Dr. Jane, and this has been 10 Minute Positive Mental Health Podcast. If you like what you've heard, then please feel free to go to my website, which is drjane.co.uk. And if you go on podcasts, you can subscribe and download and listen to the library of lots of different subjects on my Positive Mental Health Podcasts. I will speak to you again very, very soon. Thank you for listening.